QST from W1AW, the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio in Newington, Connecticut. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for April 20th, 2016. The ARRL Aries Audio e-letter is a voice version of the ARRL Aries e-letter, which is compiled by Rick Palm, K1CE, in Daytona Beach, Florida. I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland, and my audio script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB, in Laurel, Maryland. Here are highlights of what we have for you in this issue. Oregon Amateurs Aid Search and Rescue Mission. ARRL to offer Understanding Local MOUs webinar. Tip: FEMA Daily Operations Briefings, Other News, Alerts, all available by email. Baker to Vegas Relay Challenge supported by Mass of Southwestern Hams. Tech Tip: Aries Racy's Power Pole Configuration. Letters, and this month we have three, ARDF and SAR, Tone Squelch Systems and Alerts, and Check the Laws Before Spiking the Ground. FEMA Bulletin, Learn to Protect Yourself in a Tornado Situation. And finally, Parting Shots. Those are the headlines. Now, here are the stories. Oregon Amateurs Aid Search and Rescue, or SAR, Mission. Mike Moore, W7ECX of Joseph, Oregon, was relaxing with his family on Sunday night, March 20, 2016, when he received a galvanizing call at 9:30 through the local repeater. Mike Muzia, KG7MVI, a member of Wallowa County, Oregon Search and Rescue, or SAR, was calling Moore with a report of a missing snowmobiler in the rugged Salt Creek Summit, or SCS, area of the Wallowa Mountains. SCS is 36 miles southeast of Joseph, Oregon. The Wallowa County Sheriff's Office, or WCSO, had unreliable communications in this area, and Mr. Muzia wanted a solid link back to SAR Incident Command. Mr. Moore immediately linked the local VHF repeater to the Salt Creek Summit UHF repeater and VHF remote base. At the same time, Mr. Muzia was on his way to the summit to check for what might be the missing snowmobiler's vehicle on advice from the SAR dispatcher. When Mr. Muzia arrived at the summit, he found a vehicle, took its license plate number, and relayed it to Mr. Moore through the SCS repeater system to send the information to WSCO Deputy Paul Pagano for identification. Deputy Pagano informed Mr. Moore that the vehicle registration matched the identification of the missing snowmobiler and requested help from SAR to mount a search and rescue mission. Deputy Pagano also requested that Mr. Moore join the SAR Incident Commander, Jim Akinson, at the SAR trailer in Enterprise, Oregon, to provide ad hoc training for rescuers on radio communications technique and their multimode radios before they departed for the search area. Mr. Moore eventually stayed on with Incident Commander Akinson to ensure that all communication systems were running properly and that the search teams were versed in the use of their radios. In addition, he also set up several SAR-owned GPS trackers for each SAR member to carry as an added safety measure. Salt Creek Summit posed temperatures in the mid-30s with winds of 10 miles per hour and a mix of rain and snow. The area was completely snowed in, with the exception of the summit access road from a nearby highway. Access to the rest of the area from the summit was limited to tracked vehicles, skis, and snowshoes. The SAR team operated with snowmobiles hauled up on trailers via the access road to the summit. As SAR team members entered the search area, Mr. Muzia maintained contact with Moore through the remote VHF base. On advice from the missing man's son, searchers started scouring the most likely route the snowmobiler might have taken. At 3 a.m., the missing man was found. He was wet, cold, and dehydrated, but otherwise in good shape. Mr. Moore then contacted Deputy Pagano, who then contacted the man's wife. The missing man's snowmobile ignition had failed several miles down the trail, and he had walked back 2 miles in a snowstorm to a temporary shelter. After a quick medical check, searchers brought the man back to the summit and immediately returned to Enterprise, where the man's wife was waiting. Deputy Picano told Mr. Moore that he was thoroughly impressed with the reliability of amateur radio installations around the county. He went on to say he was gratified by the willingness of amateur radio operators to help out in an emergency. During the search, Scott Hampton, KB7DZR, Mr. Moore's wife Joy, K7DMK, and Mr. Muzia's wife Anna, KG7CWW, kept in contact via their radios and telephones, relaying information and brainstorming ideas to further serve the effort. Thanks to Tom Bingham, WB7EUX in Joseph, Oregon, with additional information provided by Mike Moore, W7ECX, also in Joseph, Oregon, for this exciting story. ARRL to offer Understanding Local MOUs webinar. Mike Corey, KI1U, the ARRL's Emergency Preparedness Manager, tells us ARRL headquarters will be offering a training session for Ares Emergency Coordinators, District Emergency Coordinators, and Section Emergency Coordinators on local, section, and state-level Memorandums of Understanding for Ares. The training webinar will be Tuesday, May 24, 2016, at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and is expected to last for 1 hour. You may register for the webinar online. And I have a rather lengthy web address for you, so I'm going to repeat it several times. That web address is https://attendee.gotowebinar(1453-7133-1652) again with no spaces. Now I know this is hard to copy, so I'll repeat this 2 more times. The URL is https://attendee.gotowebinar(1453-7133-1652), and again, no spaces. So let me read that again for you. https://attendee.gotowebinar(1453-7133-1652)), again, no spaces. That webinar will be recorded and made available online afterward. All ECs, DECs, and SECs are encouraged to participate. We're going to pause now for a few seconds to allow repeaters to identify. Please stand by. We'll be right back. This is the ARRL Ares Audio E-Letter for April 20th, 2016, and I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. Please let us know if your repeater is airing the audio version of the ARRL E-Letter by sending an email to kz3ab@arrl.net. Please include the day, time, location, repeater call sign, frequency, and any sponsoring club. That email address again is kz3ab@arrl.net. And thank you for your support. Now, more news. TIP, FEMA daily operations briefings and other news and alerts available by email. ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager Mike Corey, KI1U, wrote this tip. He says, I signed up last year to receive FEMA daily operations briefings by email. These briefings contain a quick summary of national weather forecasts, U.S. fire weather outlooks, and hazards forecasts for three-day periods. Examples are much above normal temperatures, heavy rain or snow, severe weather, a space weather report, which covers geomagnetic storms, solar radiation storms, and sunspot activity, plus a world map and graphs of impacts on HF communications and radio blackouts. A table on disaster requests and declarations is furnished in this report. The briefing is, well, brief. A lot of valuable information is presented mostly graphically, rendering the report easy and quick to scan and read. I can get through it in just a minute or two. Mr. Corey says, I recommend to ARIES, RACES, and other program members to sign up for this daily FEMA mailing for national, regional, and local situational awareness. You may sign up for these reports at www.fema.gov/email. That URL again is www.fema.gov/email with no spaces. Baker to Vegas Relay Challenge supported by massive Southwestern hams. Hundreds of amateur radio operators, principally from California, Nevada, and Arizona, came out to support the 2016 Baker to Vegas Relay Challenge on March 19th and 20th. The more than 100 hams from the ARRL Los Angeles section made up a significant number of those providing communications support. In many cases, the operators camped out overnight, either before or after the event, in order to accommodate the large event schedule. As in previous years, Joy Matlock, KD6FJV, was the communication director, with significant help from Margie Hoffman, KG6TBR. Together, they were responsible for organizing the amateur communications effort. This is no small task and involves nearly a full year of planning and preparation. This event played host to 264 law enforcement teams in a grueling 120-mile relay race course. The race began just outside Baker, California, near the south end of Death Valley, and ended in Las Vegas, Nevada. Amateurs provided needed race staffing, but also filled potential emergency communication gaps in remote portions of the course. Los Angeles ARIES, ARIES LAX, had teams covering the Relay Challenge stages number 3, number 8, and number 9, led by DEC Rusey Mulberry, K1EH, ARIES member Jim Stoker, AG6EF, and ARIES member Karina Lister, KF6ZZY. The winning teams by order were the Los Angeles Police Department team, Los Angeles San Diego County-wide team, and the New York Police Department team. This event allows the Southwestern U.S. amateur community to showcase its abilities to the country's law enforcement community. Thanks to ARRL Los Angeles Section Manager David Greenhut, N6HD, for this report. Tech Tip, ARIES RACES Power Pole Configuration. Lou Wallach, N9WL in Albuquerque, New Mexico, wrote, I switched all of my DC power connectors to power poles years ago. I found that descriptions of configurations like tongue up and hood down were not clear. I ended up looking at a picture for the correct configuration. An easy way to remember the ARIES RACES power pole orientation is red on right, letter A up on both connectors. That way you cannot confuse the hood or the tongue. Thanks, Lou, for that valuable tip. And now letters. This month we have three. The first one is titled ARDF and SAR from Joe Moel, K0OV. He wrote, I read with interest your story in last month's issue of the efforts of the ARRL Maryland DC Section ARIES in supporting the search for an autistic man wearing a radio beacon leg bracelet. It was another fine example of an opportunity for Ares to work shoulder to shoulder with an agency to save lives and serve the public. For the best chance of success in such incidents, there needs to be advanced coordination, planning, and training. That is exactly what has happened in some places, such as in San Luis Obispo County, California. I wrote about the hams there who regularly support Project Lifesaver in my Homing In Radio Direction Finding column in CQ VHF magazine for winter 2008. That article is on my website at www.homingin.com/lifesaver with no spaces. Again, that's www.homingin.com/lifesaver with no spaces. I hope this article serves as an inspiration for Ares groups in other areas served by Project Lifesaver to get involved with it and to equip them in advance with appropriate radio direction finding equipment for the most rapid response. The phase Doppler radio direction finder equipment mentioned in your story is not the best RDF method for this application. I would welcome the opportunity to correspond with hams and Ares groups who seek to support Project Lifesaver in their own localities. You may contact me at k0ov@homingin.com with no spaces. Joe's email address again is k0ov@homingin.com with no spaces. We'll continue with letters in a few seconds, but right now it's time once again to take a station break. We'll be right back, so stay tuned. This is the ARRL Ares Audio e-letter for April 20th, 2016. Now, more letters. And our second letter is titled Tone Squelch Systems and Alerts, and it comes to us from Richard Stiebel, W6APZ in Palo Alto, California. Rich writes, "When Citizens Band, or CB, became available in the late 1950s, operators wanted to eliminate the constant chatter but still have their radios on to hear a family member or a friend calling. Two tones transmitted at the start of a transmission brought up the desired station, leaving out the undesired. For those who had radios without the built-in selective calling capability, they used an external box which contained the tone decoder, an audio amplifier, and loudspeaker that connected to the earphone jack of the radio. When the proper tones were received, the audio signal from the radio was passed to the audio amplifier in the box and out the box's speaker. Today, we have more sophisticated methods, such as digital code squelch, that's DCS or CDCSS, CTCSS, that's subaudible tones, and other digital modes that could provide a reliable way to activate Ares Racy's hams for a drill or an emergency." Mr. Stiebel says, "I've wondered why hams still rely on cell phones and other non-amateur technology for such purposes when we could be using our own amateur systems. Having a reliable selective calling system would enable hams involved in emergency communications to monitor one or more frequencies, yet not disturb their families with routine ham communications. Why isn't such a system currently in use? Why don't we see articles on how to implement selective calling in the literature?" Good questions, Rich. Let's see if we get any answers. And our last letter comes from John Bowser, N0YXG, and is titled "Check the Laws Before Spiking the Ground." John writes, "As a CERT instructor, amateur extra class licensee, and the project facilitator and utility cut inspector for the city of St. Joseph, Missouri, I read your warning to check for underground facilities before driving in a ground spike. In Missouri, an excavator must call the one call center at least 2 and not more than 10 working days prior to disturbing soil. Setting up a portable antenna for a disaster does not meet the definition of an emergency on the excavator's part. With all of the fiber optic and plastic lines being bored in, it would be dangerous to drive in a ground stake without waiting the 2-day minimum. This law includes homeowners working in their own yard. There are only 2 exceptions to the law. Number 1, a homeowner planting a garden, or number 2, a farmer plowing less than 16 inches deep. I'm not familiar with the one-call laws in other states. Thanks, John, for your advice. FEMA Bulletin: Learn to protect yourself in a tornado situation. Plan ahead. Your primary goal should be to go to the safest place for protection before the tornado approaches and take additional measures for personal cover. If a tornado warning is issued, immediately move to the best available protection. Having advance notice that a tornado is approaching your area can give you the critical time needed to move to a place with better protection. The best protection in all tornadoes is to seek shelter in a structure built to FEMA Safe Room or International Code 500 Storm Shelter standards. If you're unable to get to a safe room during a tornado, move to an interior, windowless room on the lowest level of a building, preferably the basement. Take personal cover under sturdy furniture, such as a table. Cover your head and neck with your arms, and place a blanket or coat over your body. You may find a tornado safety checklist by clicking on www.redcross.org, with no spaces, and search for Tornado Safety Checklist. That URL again is www.redcross.org, with no spaces, and search for Tornado Safety Checklist. And finally, we have Parting Shots. Cape Cod, Massachusetts Aries held its winter exercise on January 30th. Operations were based out of the Sandwich EOC and run by Cape Cod Aries with support from the Sandwich Emergency Management Agency. More than 30 stations were contacted on VHF and HF bands, with the furthest VHF direct contact being the South Shore Hospital, 40.3 miles away in Weymouth, and into Maine on HF. Narrowband emergency messaging software was used during the exercise. Operations were conducted using a backup portable emergency generator. This information was provided by the ARRL Eastern Massachusetts Section News. The Midwest's Sioux City area is unique. There are 3 states separated by rivers just across from each other. Until recently, there has been little club activity on the Nebraska side. All that changed recently when the emergency management director of Dakota County, Nebraska, asked that the Aries program be rebuilt to support county emergency communications needs. To meet the request and add new hams and Aries members to the area, it was decided to hold a technician class. Several emergency management and health department officials wanted to take the class too. A flyer with class information was sent to other emergency managers and on social media, with the result that students from as far as 75 miles away registered for the class. Students, including the county sheriff and a local police officer, started the 2 classes. The classes were held in the South Sioux City Law Enforcement Center training room with logistics support, courtesy of the emergency management director. 19 new technician class licensees and Aries candidates were the happy result. This information was provided by the ARRL Nebraska Section News. Well, it's time once again to take a station break. We'll be right back with our goodbyes in just a few seconds. Stay tuned. That concludes the ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter for April 20th, 2016. The ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter is a monthly service of the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Organization for Amateur Radio. The ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter is a voice version of the ARRL Aries E-Letter, compiled and written by Rick Palm, K1CE, in Daytona Beach, Florida. To learn more about amateur radio, or to get the latest in amateur radio news, visit us on the web at ARRL.com. www.arrowhead.org. You may also find us on Facebook or Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have any questions about amateur radio or the ARRL, you may also write us via snail mail at ARRL, 225 Main Street, Newington, Connecticut, 06111. Our thanks to this month's contributors. My audio script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB in Laurel, Maryland. And I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. Copyright 2016 ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. All rights reserved. Thanks for listening, and 73.